Hello, welcome to the Watch Along Suspicion Edition, episode 6.
Right, I hope that we got some applause in there because I feel like that could be the first time I've got that right. Maybe not. Here I am, for people viewing this brilliant content, I have my suspicion hat on, which Zach has stolen actually, so it kind
you
of.
You my suspicion hat.
Yeah, Zach's suspicion hat. Zach is my husband.
Don't be suspicious.
We don't have the license to that song, but you know, great TikTok trend. So it's a little bit sticky, you know, with a hair gel and
hey!
Yeah, it's early. I'm excited. We're going to get to speak to somebody wonderful today. Every guest we have on here is absolutely magic, and this person is going to be no exception. We're going to be zooming with England, hence being up early, hence me already having made coffee and consumed quite a bit of it. No tea this morning, we needed to pack a punch. Already had my hot water and lemon. Now we're going straight into the hard stuff, the coffee. And kind of like a massive nerd, I have it in a Starbucks Pike Place mug, and it is Starbucks Pike Place.
Yeah, that's from Pike Place.
What is Seattle? Oh, that's why it's called Pike Place?
Yeah, that's where the original Starbucks was at Pike Place in Seattle, down on the harbor.
Oh my gosh, join us for all your Starbucks-related facts. Starbucks sponsor me, you know what I'm saying? I'm pretty
and
much...
That mug is from that Pike Place.
Oh, that's what you were saying.
Yeah.
So the mug is from actual wherever this is. I suppose this has suddenly turned into a suspicion watch-along slash Starbucks fan fiction fest. Well, not really fiction, but fanfest. Okay, clearly I need more of this coffee. Thank you for being here. I am gonna switch out of this outfit, you know, BTS information. I haven't worn this for, oh my gosh, years. And you know when you find something in your closet that you just think, oh my gosh, I'm gonna put that on, I haven't worn him in ages. And I found a tissue in the sleeve that, I'm not joking, has to be years old. So that's great. I'm sure there's some really interesting microbes going on in there. And I've got a hat on that is my Suspicion Edition hat, which is what we got when we wrapped the show, which I haven't seen since we wrapped, gosh, almost a year ago, because my husband Zach has it. You know, thanks for sticking with us in this long introduction. With that being said, I'm gonna change into something a little bit more appropriate for this episode of the Watch Along. Still have sweatpants on, obviously, because we're Zooming, so why would I have restrictive clothes on, you know? Be in your pajamas. This is not the actual jumper, sweater, top that I wore in this episode, because that was one of the outfits I didn't buy. I don't really know why. But anyway, this is an homage to that. Homage? Is that the right word? Zach's saying yes, homage to that. So here she is, we're in blue, we're in powder blue for this episode of the Watch Along Suspicion Edition, episode 6, Be the Grey Man. I have my auto, I don't have an auto cue, I have it printed out, you know what I mean? We'd be old school. Here's the tagline of the episode, The Grey Man. The suspects prepare to flee, but each must decide which way to run. Vanessa shares a secret with Scott. Catherine does client damage control. So there we go. What a great tagline. Must be difficult to write taglines, I feel like. Anyway, that was did a great job. Today, we have Tom Rhys-Harries joining us, who of course plays Eddie Walker. Amazing actor. Can you hear that? Again, still construction going on. Tom Rhys-Harries, wonderful actor, great person. And you're gonna get to spend an hour with him as we chat away. This could be a 2-hour episode, who knows? We might just natter on forever. I hope you're enjoying these. Gosh, episode 6, we've only got 2 more after this, where the show comes to its grand conclusions. I'm really curious to see what your theories are. I feel like if you're watching this, you probably watched till the end. So if there's some spoilers in this, I apologize, but I hope you love it. Welcome along. Oh, do you know what? I'm just gonna really quickly give that some ice. That's what you feed those, ice. She's, you know, she's lost her flowers and she's going back. We're in a replenishing stage. Here's what she needs is 3 ice cubes. Okay, brilliant, that's done. Now we're ready. See you in the Zoom.
to the Watch Along Suspicion Edition, episode 6, with Tom Rhys Harries, who plays Eddie Walker in Suspicion, along with, if you haven't seen White Lines, you need to, because I met Tom and then watched all of White Lines and then had a funky period of not feeling like I was in my own body when I was talking to him. So if you haven't watched that, you must, because it's so good. Tom, hey, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Lil.
All right, so before we just natter on, let's press play. So Tom and I, seamlessly behind the scenes, have figured out that we're both at 1 minute 59 of Suspicion, episode 6, titled Be the Grey Man. So we're going to press play in 3, 2, 1, play. Oh my gosh, that's okay. Amazing that worked. Okay, mine's going. Is yours going?
I've got a blurry corridor.
Ah, I've got a blurry corridor too. Oh, the joys. okay, perfect. So we've got some, quite a few questions that I'm going to pepper through if I can remember. But I guess the first one is like, how did you come to do this project? You have a great kind of way into being involved in Suspicion. Could you tell us?
Expand on that,
babes.
Yeah, so it's kind of, it's very weird. It felt like, was it serendipitous? When this project was first kicking about the place, before COVID and pandemic and everything, I couldn't go up for it because I was busy doing something else. And then two of my friends were up for this Eddie, the part, in Suspicion, and it was called Tailspin. Do you remember it being called Tailspin?
I know, such a great name.
They were up for Tailspin, and I just remember them talking out. And they had this agreement where they were like, okay, whoever gets it has to take the person who didn't get it out for steak.
Perfect. So they were two of your friends up for the role of Eddie, but you weren't even
exactly
auditioning because you weren't available.
No, I wasn't available. And then, but they're two really good friends of mine, one of which I was living with at the time. Anyway, so Suspicion starts, Tailspin starts, and one of them gets it, the one who I was living with.
Which in itself is amazing, because how many people are, like, you know, hundreds of possibly thousands of people up for the part of Eddie, two of your friends are auditioning, and one of them gets it. Like, that's mad. And the other one gets a steak dinner.
Yeah, I know. by the time that they were talking about this, it was kind of further on down the line of, look at that little dog. Oh, she's got to catch it.
She's smelling something. We're just watching the scene where the dog is about to discover, oh, Monique. I'd forgotten all about this. Isn't it fun when you watch parts of the episode, and I mean, we weren't there during filming it just makes me be like, oh my gosh, I must have read that script, I mean, a year ago.
I also think with those kind of things where you're like, because I've died quite a lot on screen, I don't know what it is, people like to kill me, but I've died with my eyes closed, I've also died with my eyes open.
Which do you prefer?
Oh, eyes closed every day, because also you can end up Sorry, I'm getting a phone call.
Is it someone important?
Jack, go find it to know.
Yeah, of course.
Cheers, man. Ta-da.
Sorry. That was Tom Rhys Harries speaking Welsh, which I love hearing him speak Welsh.
So, yeah, I'm Welsh. I'm from Wales and I speak Welsh with
my family. Tom.
Hello, Henry Thomas. So, yeah, dying with your eyes open is, because you remember, like, what's realistic? And then also you can end up spending hours just, like, trying not to blink.
Yeah, that's a big skill. One of the only acting lessons on film I took
the whole time they just said the way to act is just to not blink. So train yourself not to blink, because as soon as you blink on camera, they're going to cut away to the next person. So the whole class was us just like going bloodshot and like getting eye infections. Right.
There's
there's a great
video that Michael Caine did. I think it's like in the 70s. Or the 80s.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Yes, I have watched it. That's probably what the teacher watched.
Oh man, some of his acting tips are just gold. Like, there's one where he's... So say this is the camera.
Yeah.
But you're recording us in a naturalistic setting where, you know, you're not doing direct address or breaking the fourth wall. But Michael Caine's like, if you want to bring the audience in, you have to sometimes have to open yourself up to the camera so you're up there. And then also, occasionally, what's quite good to do is to glance between two characters and then sort of glance at the camera as you're going past. I'm like, that's so mad, man.
That's it worked so for him, that's the thing. I feel like, you know, maybe we should try that. Just a little glance, a little wink at the camera.
I get edited out, man.
Right, sorry. So I took us off on a tangent. So the two friends, one of them booked it. It was the dog. Squirrel.
Two friends, one of them booked it. And the one who I lived with, his name's Ed Blumel, which some people watching this might know of Ed from shows such as Sex Education. We're talking Killing Eve, A Discovery of Witches. Man works a lot and is very talented. So Ed booked it, and I was living with Ed at the time. And, I'm sort of an interested party to this because they're my friends and I knew it was going on, but that shit happens all the time. So can I swear?
Yeah, whatever you like.
And then I went off and did the job I was doing, and COVID happened, so my job got put on pause, and Ed was supposed to join in with you guys episode 2 or 3.
Yeah.
And because he was already tied into a contract with another show, the other show wouldn't let Ed come on to this with the postponement that was involved in, you know, when it was going to shoot. I'm all of a sudden free, and then I get an audition through to play Ed's part, Eddie. It was so weird. And then I told Ed, I was like, hey man, we had this conversation, I was like, is it weird? You might, because it's a bummer that Ed couldn't do it.
Yeah.
And then, there's this thing as well, isn't it? Where you're like, somebody's going to get it. Somebody's going to get a job. And the only negative I can see from like a friend booking a gig versus, I don't know, some stranger, is that you might be forced to sort of look at it or be aware of it more than you would have if somebody else had got it. That's the only negative.
Yeah.
We had a conversation, and I ended up buying him a steak.
Hey! Everybody gets a steak! I just love that story. It's just such a... You just never flipping know what's going to happen. And that shutdown was... You know, closed the door for him for suspicion, but opened it for you, and then opened it for his other gig, and then closed it for your job that you had previously, but now that's opening again. It's like, you know, just a lot of doors opening and closing. Speaking of which, you weren't at the... So we're now at the scene now where we're all getting on this train.
Look at you with your coat.
Look at me with my big coat. God, I loved that coat because it was freezing when we were filming, and that I feel like this is the first time... At least I was in, like, coats that were warm. It was... Remember being on that hill there? It was so... I mean, so cold. Our hair is the same. Got quite a lot of questions about your hair, actually, but I'll wait till it changes to ask you them.
On that hill, I remember saying to... Because I was supposed to be joining you from somewhere. Do you think that there's a point where it's like, oh, we can't just... We're just at the hill. Why are we at the hill? And then I said to Chris Long, what if I'm weeing? Do you remember this?
Yes, I do, actually.
What if the cars
Yeah, why would we have stopped? Yes, good point.
And then I was like, what if I'm waiting? And he was like, yeah, I suppose so. And then I was like, okay, cool, so I'll come in as if I've had a wait. And then, but this is probably like, give me an inch. Topical. Give me, no, I'm joking. I don't talk about that. So I then would like progressively be like coming in and doing my belt up, and then coming in and I was like running in with my trousers up and having to my knees pulling them up. Chris was just like, okay, mate. A little bit less than that.
Yeah, we've got that. Let's try another one. That's such a good point, though, because, yeah, I'd forgotten about that. And that is also dedication, because it was a freezing that day, and you were there with your trousers down. So, hey, you know what I mean? You weren't there for the train bit, but when we had to get on that train, Georgina, Kunal and I, that was a real-life train that we had to get on, and it was shot like guerrilla style, and if we didn't get on the train and anybody got off with a mask on, then we had to all get on the train and then take it to the next stop and then get off and then get the other train back and then get off and then switch the platforms all within 10 minutes because that's when the next train was coming. Never been so like tense in my whole life.
Was it the train to Gatwick?
Oh, do you know, I don't know.
I did do that, but not with you guys. Exactly the same.
Oh, right. Yeah, I couldn't believe it. It's like, have we not hired a train?
I know.
Clearly not. You got to be in a car with Elias for however many hours.
That was on a closed circuit, so it's supposed to be like the motorway, right? But it's like a car test circuit. And these are all SA cars. I don't know if that's what you'd call them. And then we're just driving around in a big circle. Like,
wow. Yeah. So where's the is the camera just onto the side of the
You have different setups, right? So four setups outside the car. That camera's right in front of me outside the window. That's right in front of Elias. And then this is one that's kind of hanging off the side of the car, and that's hanging off the side of my car.
They're like attached to the car, right? They're not, you're not on some kind of trolley that's pulling you along.
No, they are attached to the car.
Yeah. And Elias is driving.
Elias is driving, and then you can go on a load loader as well.
Yeah, they go low loader.
The industry terms. And then, but a low loader is when you're on, the car is not being driven that you're in, but you are on the back of a van and it looks like you're driving.
Yeah.
And then, so then you can have loads of different setups around. That's how you get those shots where the, you know, camera sort of like does that because it's on a kind of lift type thing.
Finds you and cranes it around and all that sort of thing. Do you, as a human being, I love car journeys because I feel like you could really get into great conversations without, because you're not looking at the person. Some of my deepest chats have been in cars because, you know, it's just less intense somehow. As an actor, do you enjoy scenes in a car or do you not like them as much because you don't get that same interaction, like, in terms of eye contact?
That is an interesting question and not one that I necessarily have thought of much. I suppose what you've got in front of you is different. And you can find thoughts in a different way. But then it depends what you're shooting, what you're trying to, you know, what your character's trying to get, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel like with this episode, we're still, you know, this is the first time I think we see you alone with Sean. So then it's kind of, we get to see, and the reason that you're with him is because he doesn't want to let you out of his sight. He doesn't really trust you. So then presumably Eddie knows that. And so that puts an extra layer of tension on. And then you kind of have this chance as Eddie to get him on your good side.
Yeah. I think, and I guess with a lot of, like this business where I was trying to be like, how do I justify Eddie's gung-ho-ness?
Yeah. He's got such a great energy.
I mean, we know at this point, don't we, that Eddie is in cahoots with somebody else.
Yes. I think we know that it's the police. We know it's Angel, I think. I might have just ruined that. If I've ruined that, sorry, but, you know, it's a watch along.
No, I think the audience knows.
Yeah, because we saw you. Yeah.
There was a bit here, right, that Chris cut. So she fondles me, I guess, looking for a gun or something. And
yeah, these contacts of Sean. And what happened?
She touched me there and I go, whoop! as if she touched me. And it was in the previous edit, but Chris, obviously, the director, has cut it. And I was cutting it, so I was like, oh.
That's a funny moment. But that's what's so lovely that you bring to Eddie and other parts you do, like, where appropriate. But there's a levity that comes with your energy that's so lovely because it is so serious. And I think when you know, if I can imagine myself in this situation, it's like you can't be tense all the time. Like, humans just aren't, like, we need this release. And Eddie has that, like, when you just jumped into whatever this little canal boat is that you're going in and you're just, like, jumping in and tap the top, it's... That just feels
jumping
very...
Jumping in and tap the top.
Jumping in and tap the top. It just feels very real. Like, that was all you, right?
Yeah, I suppose I was looking at... Because I come in later as well, so I was looking at it going, how does this... How do you justify and make it sort of... But how do you make it so that we as an audience would buy the fact that this guy is saying and doing things that are kind of, like, ridiculous? And I wanted him to seem so sort of out there that you'd go, that Elias in particular, I suppose, and the others would go, I mean, it's... No. There's no chance this guy could be... I mean, he's too much of a clusterfuck to be involved with anybody serious.
Yeah.
Which is kind of tricky to do as well, because you're doing that with a view... I was doing it with a view... It's hard to navigate that without endgaming, because you're kind of gunning for the point where you, as an actor, get to do the switch.
Yeah.
And we didn't have all the scripts, did we? So we didn't know when that would happen.
Yeah, yeah. But, so how much did you know of Eddie before? And, you know, if we can just say, like, if you're not... We'll try not to spoil the end of the season, because obviously this is episode 6 and we've got 2 more to go. But if you're watching this, you've probably seen the season. Without spoiling the big turn, maybe. How much did you know before? When you were auditioning for Eddie, did you know that that there was going to be that duplicity there?
Yeah, I did. And that was... So you have a kind of overall character arc and... a couple of episodes, and then the key points, I guess, the key beats for that character throughout the season. But that was the thing that interested me the most.
Yeah.
Was the duplicity of this guy. It's fun to play, isn't it? Because you get to act within acting.
Yeah, totally.
And then I suppose you get to play with, like, how good an actor is someone.
Yeah.
Which is always tricky. It's a bit like it's a bit like playing drunk is really hard.
Oh my God, so hard. Every time I start drinking, I think, right, I need to film myself because there's, you know, I need to know how it actually, and then obviously I get drunk and I forget. But that's like the golden ticket, because once you can do acting drunk, I feel like that's it. You're on your way to an Oscar. You've got it covered. So was that a reaction for you? With you talking about, like, how do you play, how good of an actor is Eddie, was part of that decision-making from you, Tom, going, I'm going to play him playful, because then that's his way of seeming non-threatening so people wouldn't question him, rather than trying to play him playing too kind of serious?
Yes and no. It was a kind of like part of a discussion.
Yeah.
That I was having with Chris and Rob, the writer. Yeah. Chris is the, you know, showrunner, director. And as is Rob, but not a director.
Yeah.
Sorry, that wasn't very clear. But,
no, it was. Rob Williams, our showrunner and creative, like, writer who adapted it from The False Flag, and then Chris Long, director.
Exec producer, director.
Exec producer, director. All round mastermind.
What a guy.
What a guy.
Bought us lunch. Do you remember?
Multiple times.
Did you go to that place in...
In New York, yeah.
What a lovely man.
What a lovely
man. So, it was discussions with them, but also I was trying to sort of squeeze out how much fun I could have with it.
Yeah.
And I guess you're trying to justify, without being like... It's trying to justify a character in a space within reason where you can sort of... be as playful, and playful for my money doesn't necessarily have to be like the character's playful, but you as an actor can be playful within, you know, the confines that you set. So I guess it was a case of setting the confines and manipulating them to suit my wants and needs.
Yeah.
I think. And then... Well,
yeah.
And then, yeah, trying to justify how this... Because he is, like, bombastic, but there would have been, like, plenty of different ways of playing Eddie. The thing I was conscious of was not doing it just for the sake of having a switch. So it was, like, not just, like, okay, I'm going to be like this now, so I can be like that later. And I think that kind of fucks you a bit.
Yeah.
Early on, if you... Because also, we didn't have the full script, so we didn't know exactly when that switch would happen.
Yeah, and exactly how, right? That's really interesting, yeah. That then you don't want to... Yeah, because you don't want to play something just so that you can play against it later, because you're spending much more time playing this version of him than whatever might come later.
That's like 101, acting 101, isn't it? You just don't end game.
Yeah.
But that was something I was finding interesting throughout. It was going, well, I know this is the truth of this guy, and we are going to see that truth at a certain point.
Yeah.
And
he was picked for a reason, right? That it's like, you know, they clearly thought there was something natural in Eddie that could work as somebody that is potentially undercover, you know? So it's like there's an essence to him that was always going to work. So
And I suppose it's convenient for them as well that he's been... Because it happens, right, that you get these undercover agents who act as university students in just to sort of break up rings of whatever sort of criminal activity that might be going on near. And I just finished shooting this film in the Middle East with Jared Butler, and I was in that film.
Casual. Oh my gosh! Do you want to invite him into the Zoom? I could send you the link again.
Can you just text him?
Yeah. Sorry.
He's lovely, but in that, the reason I'm saying this is because in that film I was playing a CIA operative who'd been sort of headhunted. This happens as well. Alice is choking me.
My gosh, you've still got your beautiful hair. I miss it.
The CIA did this as well. So this guy had been headhunted because they'd caught him hacking, this character in this film, they'd caught him hacking... traffic lights mainframe in like somewhere in America.
Right.
Bring him into court, and then they say, okay, you can either serve X amount of time in jail or work for us. And then so he takes that, because that's like, how do you find hackers?
Yeah. I'd love to see more of Eddie's backstory. Like, just that, because that is something, like you say, that does happen. And then we see the aftermath in this, you know, I'm just pitching a spin-off here. Eddie and Vanessa, you know, and Oxford. So Tara would probably be in it as well if it was Oxford. Just, sure, you know, you got to look after yourself. When we see you there with Elias, and there's, you know, you're kind of, what would you, like, you're trapped by the... gangsters, like, like a non-street way of saying it. But how was all this to shoot? Because this is Chris directing this episode, and he finds just the coolest angles. And like, where was this? Was this a set? Did it take forever? Was it pretty fast? Like,
this was a set. This is all in Ealing Studios, where we shot a lot of our interior stuff, didn't we?
Yeah, but I didn't realise this was a set. Also, grates on the ground. Did you ADR this whole thing? I feel like they look so cool, but whenever you come to actually film with grating on the ground, it's a nightmare.
It's a sound nightmare.
Sound nightmare.
I feel for sound guys. It's
oh
like,
my gosh.
Because everybody's just like, oh, we can do it later.
No, fix it in post. You'll figure it out.
£80,000.
Yeah.
I'm not sure we did ADR this.
Oh, that's good. Because this is such a massive... The reason I asked you to do this episode and you so graciously agreed to watch it along with us is because we see this shift in Eddie, but not... he manages to do it while still remaining undercover, but obviously the suspicion is heightened because all of a sudden you can speak these languages and, you know, we didn't know that you could before. Was that a tricky balance to strike? Like, how did you... Are you genuinely scared for your life in this moment?
I suppose I've always... aware of the fact that Eddie always has cards he can play to get him out of certain situations. However, those when playing those cards, the aftermath or the aftershock of having done that, ipso speaking Farsi, is then another issue that he has to deal with. It just makes it more interesting because when your character is in any kind of like compromising situation, it's always more interesting to play because you have something you have to get out of.
Yeah.
I didn't, not necessarily. A lot of it was me trying to sort of like find justification for stuff.
Yeah. How was the speaking Farsi of it all?
Hard.
Was it?
Yeah. And
because you're good with languages though, you know, like, did that help at all? Just...
I think the thing I was finding was, if I have enough time with it, Farsi in particular, because it's like far, it's very far away from, like, the roots of it aren't in English or Welsh or Spanish, as you know, I speak a bit of Spanish. So the only way I could sort of wrap my head around it was, like, learning it as sounds. And the thing I do find difficult is gesticulating through a language that you don't understand. So say, for example, in Farsi, I was to go... It's not me.
Yeah.
He has it over there. It's a box. I don't know, something like that.
Yeah.
Then in Farsi, the structure of it would be, it's a box he has over there, not me.
Yeah, so you don't know where to... That's really interesting, because then where do you put the emphasis? And yeah, you have exactly. to obviously then, know what you're saying.
Or where you stress. So particularly when you're like, it's not just like a walkie-talkie thing where you're just like, I'm gonna die, stop doing that, we'll get you the money now.
Yeah.
Well, we are inclined to, you know, I don't know, be a bit more, you'd communicate, particularly if you're trying to communicate with somebody.
Yeah.
You use everything at your disposal, and that was a tricky thing.
Yeah, I find that in scenes whenever I'm, like, if I've got handcuffs on or something, you realise how much, like, in the episode 4 when we all got zip tied, trying to, like, it was such a good acting exercise because trying to talk when you can't use your arms is actually really difficult. You're like, oh my God, I just have to rely on my face and my voice, like, this is so much harder than I thought. That's such a good point. So did you... So you learnt the sounds, but then did you try and learn, like, you know, what word was what? Or did you just... Because it looks very natural as you're doing it.
Thanks. I did. I was with someone who spoke Farsi and a dialect coach, and then you go into how well does he know it? Does he speak it fluently? Has he got, you know... And working out which words were which and then trying to gesticulate or be able to know where to stress a certain word. Because also, in different languages, a stress on a word that we might use is not... It changes the word in a different language. So, cup is cup and cup might be table.
Oh my gosh, well, you did so well.
Thanks.
Quick question from Hawkeye Lover Forever. What a great Instagram name. It says, how do you get into character? Which is an interesting question, especially for this character, when it's like, well, which part of your character are you getting into? Do you get in all of it? And then do you like go, okay, I'm this version of Eddie filming today?
When you shoot... I don't know how you feel about this, though.
Yeah.
When it's different if you shoot a series over a long period of time.
Yeah.
After a couple of months, it gets easier, doesn't it? You kind of get to know the person.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Versus doing a film or like a play where I think it's more of, I find it more useful then to be like, I can concentrate for 2 months, say, in like really, it's different. The form is different, so the approach is different, but slightly, yeah.
Yeah, I for this, that's something I think I struggled with at the start of this shoot of Suspicion, and why I was so happy that we had that break. I mean, obviously not happy with everything that was going on in the world, but it sure. actually made it so much easier that I had a bit more time then to digest Tara, because I got cast and then very quickly was on set, and there's just so much like faff going around in your brain when you're like nervous and you trying to like be on the right time zone and remember people's names, and I kind of trying to find who your character is in between those moments, I struggled with it a bit. So I think I took that question too literally, of like, how am I going to get into character, when actually by the time you get, what I came to realize is like, oh well, I did have it then. We got sent some footage of what we did to remind ourselves when we were coming back, and I was like, oh my gosh, that's fine, yeah, that seems like a character, because by the time you've got the hair, the makeup, the clothes, the lines, everybody else in the scene, it's everything's done for you.
So yeah, totally. And I feel like Suspicion as well is not, it's narrative driven, so yeah. It's like, yeah, of course you need to be believable to sort of aid the story and prop the narrative, because you know you're one part of the driving force of this story, but it isn't a character piece. We're not zooming in on these people going, oh my god, what makes them tick?
So
I guess the thing that we've, like, a lot of us as actors find interesting is that what makes people tick. And then, you know, like that sort of, in something like this, it feels like it's something that happens on the side of you telling the thing, as opposed to the main driving force of the story.
Yeah,
for my money.
Yeah, I never thought about that before, but that does make sense. And it could be why I was also feeling like, I don't know what to hang on to in a way, because we're not meant to know that much about these characters. So then you go, well,
yeah.
How does she eat breakfast? I don't know. We haven't seen it. Although we have seen it at one point, she eats cereal. When you said about knowing what makes people tick, we got another question from GurQuake084. Is that saying who or what? Gur. I just, you know, GurQuake. I think it's a woman, but anyway, asks what drives you, who or what drives you. Is it the fascination with what makes people tick? Like, is that kind of where you end, like, why you do this?
Yeah, it is. I think so. I was thinking about this a lot, where you go through different, I've been doing this for like 10 years now, and I guess initially, it's interesting, I found my journey throughout our profession, you kind of go into it on a wing and a prayer if you haven't been working as a, you know, child actor, I suppose, which I hadn't. And then you go, okay, is this, you want to feel sort of validation and justification for a choice that a lot of people are telling you is mad in terms of stability.
Yeah.
So initially, I'm saying this with hindsight, I think I was just seeking validation for this choice that I'd made. And then you kind of, that comes in different forms. At the end of which is like jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And then within that, you sort of go, okay, cool, this is kind of working. How do I become financially stable so I can continue to do this?
Mm-hmm.
And then, and this is my experience of it, and then you kind of reach a semblance of that, if, you know, you're fortunate. And then you can go, okay, what am I doing this for, and why? That's how I find it. What do I want, and are my motivations authentic, and do I, there's so much fluff, as you know, Lil, around what we do. We get to act for about 5-7% of the time.
Yeah.
So then it's like going, do I enjoy this? Is this something I want to like dance with? Are these groups of people that I want to work with and be in my life? This is a very, like, this is a very fortunate position to be in as an actor, where you can start looking and, I guess, assessing that.
Yeah.
Priorities.
Yeah. No, totally. I think that's, and it's evolving, which I think is lovely. Like, you know, it's, we get to go on, it's a privilege to go, wow, what is driving me sometimes? Because you're so focused on, like, you know, paying your rent and like getting
for sure,
the next, you know, getting the yes on that next job.
But the thing is like, as a to do it as a profession, it's a privilege, or to even be able to consider pursuing it as a profession is a privilege in and yeah, of itself.
Yeah.
And so yeah, you're going into real like micro analyzing of what makes you tick, and then into yeah, what makes people tick. But I think human beings are like, I genuinely feel like human beings' capacity for performance and storytelling is endless and very, yeah, it's like old as time. So that is interesting.
Yeah, totally. And I think you're very curious as a person. So if I didn't know you were an actor or a creator, and you know, you do a lot of artistic endeavors, if I didn't know any of that and met you, I'd go, oh yeah, totally. Like, you're very curious, you're very interested in storytelling in a way of like, what's your story? Like, you know, you're very engaging as a human. Change the subject, but we've just debuted your new short hair. Which I did get a lot of questions about, of people going, why on earth would you change your hair? It was so beautiful. We've kind of like switched. So, you know, I guess not, it's maybe a spoiler, but you took your wig off and I put my wig on.
How did you feel about your bob?
Well, I name things that I know I'm going to need to appreciate and love. So
yeah,
I named
what was
her Tina.
Tina.
She's called Tina. I really loved the idea of it because I thought, this is going to protect my hair. And it made sense. They wanted to wig us. Oh, thank you. I mean, it's all Tina. It's always nice too when you have hair that covers most of your face, because then you think, if you had a bit of a rough night, you think, oh, this is fine. Yeah. So they wigged us because we were going back and forth in time shooting wise so much that it would have just been impossible to, which I think is really difficult with any disguise show. You probably have to wig. Anyway, I loved the thought and, you know, had some like discussions with Lucy of what it could look like. And actually the first time around, it was going to be super short. Like, I was going to have a pixie cut. And then when Lucy came on board, we landed on this version of Tina instead. But it's actually, you know, talking about not being able to use your hands, I've never really worked with a full wig before. And it kind of like, you stick it to the side of your face. So you sort of feel like you can really feel it. Yeah. And then I didn't really want to touch it, because I just, if you touch it, you can put your hair behind your ear, but the likelihood of exposing some kind of lace that is keeping it in place is fairly high. So it was quite challenging to go, oh, what do I do with my hands if I can't put, like, how do I indicate that I'm like shifty if I can't put my hair behind my ear? Like, so it was quite like, I found it quite challenging, but she helped me get in character, because it felt very different from, you know, usually I don't really think about my hair because you don't really feel it.
Well, I suppose that's the thing, is with all of these different looks, is that we just want to buy that these people aren't who they were a second ago, that we could get past, like, you know, video recognition software. Or, do you remember shooting this day?
Yes, I do. That was so fun.
This was when vaccinations had just started, right? And at a different part of this, where was this? It wasn't an airport, was it? It was at like the...
No, I can't
remember. Millennium Dome or somewhere like a big, big...
Yeah, it was almost like a big... Yeah, exactly, a big venue.
But in the other half of the venue, they were doing like vaccination drives.
Yeah. It was such an amazing time to be filming, because especially with that kind of scene where there's so many background, that you, the logistics of it all and the...
Yeah, right.
And like you say, all that goes into us being on camera for like less than 30 seconds. And then when we're at work, it's like, you know, 6% of our day is actually cameras are rolling and we're on set. And those days are fun. I always find those days fun because you go, what do I have to do today? Brilliant. Say no lines and just roll a suitcase along.
Yeah. And we all really got on, didn't we? So it was just like...
Yeah. Poor Chris on those days because... Like, he's got all those background, and then he's got us being idiots, and he wants to do it in a one-shot.
Yeah. Lil, can we pause?
Yeah, let's pause. Right, everybody, we're going to pause. You know, I just realised that actually, if you're at home watching this, you really didn't have to pause because, you know, through the magic of editing, it'll be seamless. But now, for those watching, Tom Rhys Harris is in a hat and looking great. No explanation. Out. Yeah. for the wig, the hair situation for you, how was that filming with that wig? How come they decided to wig you? Didn't you used to have hair that was like that, and they basically cut it and then wigged it the same?
It wasn't that long. It was long, though, when I came on board to this. And that's the shortest... my hair as it was there.
Oh, my gosh, yeah, look at it now. It's so short.
And then there was that kind of like that funny little Mohican situation.
Was it hard, you know, because you have such beautiful hair and I feel like you had longer hair for a while... Did that feel like you were a unicorn getting your beautiful pink mane cut off? Like,
No, not really. What happened was when I came on board, I had long hair, but it wasn't as long as that. Right. Then for continuity, because we had to jump between, you know, past and present and future, where the hair was different, it makes more sense then to have short hair and then to wig the long, because you can't do it the other way around. And then... So they cut it short, and then I had a wig for, you know, up until this episode.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I felt like Eddie loves his long hair.
Yeah.
That was why would he have long hair, and hated getting it cut, whereas I was loving getting rid of the wig.
Sure.
It's my makeup time was cut by like 4/5.
Yeah. Yeah, because there was so little makeup on the show, which was lovely. It just felt, you know, that was something that Lucy really, you know, believes in people looking real on screen. That was so
nice. Well, yeah, Kunal was funny, wasn't he? Because he would come in and be like, we've been in makeup for like an hour and a half. And Kunal's like, hey, what's up? Walking 5 minutes out.
I know. Basically, just give him a little spritz and off he goes.
Well, he's only got like that much face to makeup because of his beard.
I loved his disguise in this. Because they put a bit of grey in it and, yeah, he looked very distinguished. Amazing what a bit of grey can do.
Yeah, I agree.
So then when we see this transformation of Eddie with this haircut, did that feel to you like a massive shift in terms of, like, you do look more military? Were you worried that you would look too different as to, like, you know, you're in a disguise from the public, but you still want to seem like you're the same person that you've been playing to, you know, Sean and the gang. Was that a tricky balance, or did you just kind of forget that you didn't have the wig on? And
I was just relieved to get rid of the wig. I just wanted that wig gone. No, that wasn't something I'd really... Cause we're doing it together, aren't we? We're getting...
Yeah.
We all know that we're in disguise thing.
Yeah.
Which is that by that point, Eddie, I suppose, just has to go along with whatever the requirements are to stick with the group. Because it's getting to... I think all of them are aware that this is coming to a head.
Yeah.
Particularly when we start planning going to New York. It's like, yeah, this is going to culminate in something soon.
This is starting to get dangerous, yeah.
Yeah. So it's just like, yeah, just whatever you can do to stick with the group, because that's, you know, that's where it's leading to the answers.
Yeah. Did you take the wig?
No.
I know, I didn't take mine either. They're so expensive to do that. Because we got some questions about who did Julian Tarissi asked, did you... Well, they asked what your favourite scene was to shoot, but then they asked, did you steal anything from set? And as I was watching this episode before, I was like, oh man, I hope he stole that wig, but... No,
I think that the wigs, you're right, the wigs are so expensive. The wigs are like, you know,
thousands of pounds.
Yeah. I did steal some clothes. I didn't steal. I
had
asked
to buy
if I could
mine. Oh, I paid money for mine.
Maybe I'm supposed
see, this
to
is the difference. This is the like where you see Tom coming through the playfulness. just sweet talks his way around
like,
it.
There's a thin line between like playful and just criminal.
Well, yeah, welcome to Suspicion, you know?
That's a nice shot. I love that light on the... Oh, this was funny, wasn't it? I had to pretend to be asleep.
Oh, yeah. We spent forever on your coverage. I was like, he's sleeping. How many ways can he sleep? Yeah, what
you
a great day for you.
And then it was like, should I snore? Do you know what I'm saying? To Chris? Because I'm like, what am I just doing lying here?
I was genuinely asleep. I wore my blue jumper today because I didn't buy this outfit. So I was like, well, I'll do an homage to her little blue sweater. Yeah, it was quite fun because I would forget that you were there. And then they'd yell cut and this mound in the bed would move and it'd be you. Did you fall asleep? Because this took a long time to shoot, as with everything.
I know, it took forever, the coverage on this. And then I was like... I didn't know what was going on because I was aware that I was like, obviously you're getting undressed here. And I was like, I didn't know, because you had, I knew you were coming into bed, but out of, you know, respect, of course, to you and the process of doing all of that. And I was like, I'm not going to ask any questions. I've been told to lie in this bed and be asleep. But then I was like, I didn't know if you were like, I didn't know if you were getting completely undressed or not.
Yeah,
I was just like sitting there like, just and then answer this, just don't move.
Well, and you don't want to, I mean, those scenes, it was a very tame, you know, kind of undressing scene, but they are all treated with the utmost respect. And you know, you have an intimacy coach on set, and you know, as you should, you know, any kind of exposure of skin where you can feel a bit vulnerable as an actor, it's really great to have all those protocols in place. But yes, you don't. I never thought about that. That you didn't know if it was like extreme or if we did it. Because you could do a take where it's like, all right, just, you know, take your bra off in this one and we'll just see how he reacts. Like, you don't know. Those things can happen. Yeah,
also, because it was you and Alice having a scene and I'm asleep. So I felt like any kind of question, and it hadn't occurred to me either. I wasn't like, until I was in the bed, I would have of course been allowed, but it would have felt like weird for me to be like, ask anybody, hey, is Lil getting, like, what? How undressed is she getting? Yeah.
How much could I see if I turn around right now? Should I sleep with one eye open?
No, but it was, and also it's kind of not my, it's like not my, do I need to know? Somebody just told me to lie in bed, so I was like, but then at a certain point I was like, I just don't move.
Well, the tricky thing comes when... So when you shoot a scene like that, you know, they... it's a closed set, so there's only the, like, absolutely essential people that need to be there for privacy reasons. And then, you know, you kind of have this pause before anyone can come into the set where I cover my... self, put clothes back on. So it's almost like there's this, you know, you yell cut and then there's everybody still, and I'm like trying to get my jeans like inside out again and put them on, and like anyone that's tried to put skinny jeans on quickly, I mean, it's an absolute nightmare. So there's that thing of like, did they say that it's okay and set and I can move? So it was a tense scene to be not knowing what's going on.
But how did you feel doing that? Did you feel like everything was covered in a way that was appropriate and you felt safe and...
Oh, totally, yeah. And I think those scenes are always... I find them more challenging than I think I'm going to find them. And there wasn't... You know, it's just a weird thing to do. But yeah. I do think having people like intimacy coaches on set now, where they just sort of are, they help to just coordinate it and help to make sure everybody feels comfortable. And I think that protects everybody because, you know, as a director doing it, you just want everybody to feel comfortable. And sometimes when you're in the moment, you say, yes, I feel comfortable. And then you go home and you're like, oh my God, I wasn't comfortable. And that's really difficult for everybody. So having this intimacy coach, they call you before, like a few days, like as soon as the script comes out, they talk about it. You can give direct, or at least I was offered, the scene was as written and I felt like it was, you know, extremely appropriate to the story and made sense and everything. But the as an actor now, you can kind of say, I don't like that stage direction. I don't feel comfortable doing that. And they kind of give that message to the producers and the director and the writers, and then they'll come back with something different. So it just creates this like, and it allows you to have that conversation without you feeling like you're talking to your bosses that, are they going to fire me? Cause I'm, I don't know. It was, and every intimacy coach I've worked with are really just really easy to talk to. And they kind of get it out of you without you really realizing if you were uncomfortable or not. So I think they're a really great addition to a set, and I think it just helps to protect everybody. And
yeah,
you know, and obviously Chris was shot it so beautifully, and we spoke a lot about how it was, you know, how I felt and how he felt about like how important it was to the story or not. And I mean, I never felt any pressure, but I don't know. I suppose it could have been different with a different director, but and also it was still very tame. Like I'm basically getting in a bikini.
Sure, yeah.
You know.
But you're right, I think we've in the last decade we've gone so far with that stuff in terms of...
Yeah.
I remember doing, you know, very intimate scenes on screen pre-intimacy coordinators, and then you're just kind of like, that's mad, that wouldn't happen. That, you know, like...
Yeah.
Just freestyling that
stuff.
Yeah, yeah. You're like,
whoa. Yeah, crazy. Yeah, we're so lucky to have that now. I think it's great. Tom, the episode's
done.
Over. I know. Just trying to keep you around. Thank you so much for doing this. Just as kind of a final word, do you have any advice to somebody that either wants to act or wants to kind of follow a dream or something that could feel like it's a bit impossible at times? It's a big question, but...
Yeah, I had this question from like this thing, like an interview I did the other week.
Yeah.
I'm not in a position to be giving out advice. I think that stuff is like, you can conceptually have someone say something and you can conceptually understand that, I think, but then you only... You have to have ownership over it, and that only happens through living through the thing, and everything is very case by case and individual to people. The only thing I would say, I think, in terms of like, before going into any profession, particularly if it's freelance and potentially unstable, is to really, really question your motivations behind doing it. Because if the motivation is coming from a place of curiosity and the want or need to sort of explore, as actors, human beings, the motivation behind human beings, why we tell stories and different kinds of stories, then you can find that at varying different degrees. If you want to be famous and get free shoes, which is not like unpleasant, but you're less likely to be able to manufacture a world where that happens. You might be able to, it does happen, but it's like a lot of it is out of our hands and a lot of it is blind luck, and I don't want to be a downer on it, but even when you might seem to be, you know, ticking all the boxes and doing all the stuff, it's that Instagram thing of being like, what you're presented by people is not their reality. It's like the shiny bits. But when it's good, it's amazing. And you get to meet, I love the people in our industry.
Yeah.
You get to meet some, you know, amazing, shiny, interested people. So I think, you know, I'm all for, like, chase your dreams. I also am for question what and why they are your dreams.
Yeah, I love that. Because then that means that when the going is tough, you still are able to fill your tank, because you can still be moving toward, like, you're still igniting that reason for doing it, right? If your reason is you want a story tell and you're curious about people, you can do that whether somebody gives you the free shoes or not. You can do that by creating your own work, or, you know, it's, you're still, the objective is the same whether you're shooting a short film or you're shooting a massive Apple show, whatever.
For sure. And it's not, and you, like, we all know it's like, it is in a meritocracy. You know, there are better actors than me that don't work as much as I do. And that is for a plethora of different reasons that are nothing to do with anything that we have control over.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, it's, when it's good, it's really good. When it's bad, it's really bad. It's okay. It's a decision. We're fortunate to be able to make that decision and be in a position that, you know, we can. But, and there's no end point. That's what strikes me as well. There isn't any kind of like, whoa, there we go. I'm here. I've arrived.
Yeah,
I'm,
yeah,
the
yeah.
I'm the CEO. you know what I mean? The garden always needs watering. And that's something I find kind of tiring sometimes, is the constant reassessment of what I want. Because it's always informed by what you've just done. Yeah. Or what you haven't done, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's the drive, though. That's the thirst. That's your curiosity. Enjoy the journey, isn't it?
Of course, yeah.
Thank you so much for... yeah, you must stay hydrated. Thank you so much for doing this, Tom. You're brilliant in Suspicion and everything you do.
If you
haven't seen White Lines, watch it.
Thanks, mate.
Bye.
Bye, everyone. Thanks for watching.
That concludes episode 6 of the Watch Along Suspicion edition. Thank you so much to Mr. Tom Rees-Harries. How wonderful is he? Just so talented and modest, and has a lot of humility. Is that the same as being modest? Probably, but you know what I mean. I hope you really enjoyed that. I love doing it. Gosh, that hour just flew by. I hope you're enjoying watching the show. Episode 7 is next with a very special guest. Oh, for those watching, like, my makeup has run all the way down my face. It's quite early in America where I am. It's zooming with these UK lot, you know, that time difference. It's a kicker, but hopefully I don't know, I hope my brain was working. It felt like it was, and actually with the little loo break we had halfway through, I was able to down extra bits of my coffee, so that was great. Extra bits. I probably had an extra half a cup of coffee in that little break. So I'm curious, listening back to this, if we're going to see a big vroom in energy. Okay, I'm going to leave it there. Thank you so much for watching. Thank you for sending in your questions on Instagram. We're going to have a very special guest for episode 7 and episode 8. In fact, all our guests are very special. So stick around, stay tuned, and I'll see you next week or next time or whenever you're listening to this, either as a podcast or as a video with this face situation. I don't know whether I need a nap or another cup of coffee. You know, we'll update you next week what I decide. Anyway, thank you so much for being here. Thank you for watching the Watch Along Suspicion Edition, episode 6 with Tom Rees-Harries.